Blog Talk Radio.
Folks, we can sing this song. Don't get mad, I don't mean no harm. I want to play with school. I want to play with school. I want to play with school. I mean your little fool dog. Yeah, that little fool got a long shaggy tail. While I tried to buy him, but he wasn't for sale. Can I play with school? Can I play with school? I want to play with school. I mean your little fool dog. Down in town with my hand in my hand, I was looking for a woman, didn't have no man. I want to play with school. I want to play with school. I want to play with school. I mean a little fool.
What an incredible Cinderella story. This unknown comes out of nowhere to lead the pack at Augusta. He's on his final hole. He's about 455 yards away. He's going to hit about a 2-iron, I think. Well, we got all of that. The crowd is standing on his feet here at Augusta. The normally reserved Augusta crowd. Going wild. For this young Cinderella, who's come out of nowhere, he's got about 350 yards left. He's going to hit about a 5-iron, I expect, don't you think? He's got a beautiful backswing. He got all of that one. He's got to be pleased with that. The crowd is just on its feet here. He's a Cinderella boy. Tears in his eyes, I guess, as he lines up this last shot. He's got about 195 yards left, and he's going to... Looks like he's going to... This crowd has gone deadly silent. Cinderella story, out of nowhere. A former greenskeeper now about to become the Masters champion. It looks like I'm a wreck. It's in the hole! It's in the hole!
You take drugs, Danny?
Every day.
Good. What's the problem?
How's it going, everybody? Puck Chatter Radio here on blogtalkradio.com. I am Chris Block, writer, editor, and keeper of thethirdmanin.com, puckchatter.com, here on this Thursday night, August the 30th, 2012, 8:02 here in Chicago. We are back. They're a little bit of a hiatus. How you doing, Superstar?
I am well. Yeah, a little hiatus, but, some time off for us is never a bad thing.
There is so much going on right now, Superstar. I mean, there is so much stuff going on. And we can talk about almost none of it.
Yeah, we're not allowed. At all.
Good night, everybody.
Ever.
What we will talk about tonight, CBA stuff's going on. Not much is going on. We're going to talk about why nothing's really going on, but we're going to talk about that a little bit later on. God, he's going to annoy me with that racket. Other things that have happened since we last talked to you, the Blackhawks sent some players to Sweden, a little mini camp last week. We'll talk a little bit about that. Talk about the players that can play in Rockford in the event of a lockout. Some prospect rankings. We got emails and stuff. We're going to talk about some prospect rankings. I don't know. We'll talk about some stuff. You all right with all that?
I'm more than good with all that.
And a little bit later on, we are going to talk about the dumb things that Blackhawks fans say or write on the internet.
And there's a lot of it.
Yeah, you know, I used to be a people person, Superstar.
That was a long time ago.
I used to be a people person, but that was before people ruined it. And I try my best, but I'm not going to be a people person later on. But we'll get to that a little bit later on. We're going to smoke some asses is what we're basically going to do.
Yes.
And before I forget, scheduling update here on the thirdmanin.com, Puck Chat Radio, all that stuff. Next week on the show, long-awaited, mostly, no, it is all my fault, the return of our good friend Steve Ludzik. He's got a lot to talk about, obviously. Steve's got a new website coming up. Of course, he came out this past spring, announced that he's been battling Parkinson's for the last decade, so he's going to talk about that. We're going to talk about the game today and his book, and also coming back to Chicago and visiting the past couple of seasons. He's been able to come back and visit the United Center and be around, and we'll talk to him about that. But before we do any of that, superstar, was it last weekend? It was last weekend. After 14 glorious years away from the course, I made my long-awaited, would you agree?
Very long-awaited.
My long-awaited return to the golf course. This past Saturday morning, I made my long-awaited return after 14 glorious years away. And I must say, superstar, I was great.
Well, for somebody who hasn't played in 14 years, I will admit, you did surprise me. You surprised the hell out of me by not being a complete train wreck.
In the morning.
In the morning. Well, yeah.
In the morning.
Okay, you weren't a train wreck at playing the game of golf. Although I love that you showed up with 2 dozen brand new golf balls and a driver. And that was it.
I even pointed out
the first we come up to the fence and there's the rules. The first rule on there was every player must have his own bag and own set of clubs.
The rules do not apply to block.
No. Well, if they do, it definitely didn't apply on Saturday morning.
To fill everybody in, because I know a lot of people listen to the show and they're like, "What the hell is he talking about?" Over the weekend, we had a Saturday. It was a big bachelor party, and it started off with some good old fashioned golf. And like I said, I made my return, and I was great. But when we walked up to, we get there, I mean, I don't know. I've moved a few times in the last 14 years. I used to have clubs. I once did. The driver that I used to walk the 19th, superstar, whatever you're doing, can you quiet it down?
I'm not doing anything. I'm sitting in an empty house.
All right, sit still. I bought the driver that I used. I bought in 1998. So I get my driver, and I get my balls, my brand new balls, which I only hit four out of play during the entire morning, which is good.
That is good.
Yeah. And I had my shorts on. I had my sandals on. I had my floppy hat, my lady sunglasses, which, by the way, throughout the entire day, I still did not manage to lose.
Yeah, I don't know how you did that. I was for sure those were gone. I was for sure mine were gone. And I don't know how we both still have sunglasses.
They're destined to stay with me. They're hooked on my shirt right now as we speak. But yeah, we walk up to the first tee, and there's this big sign. It's got all these rules, and superstar walks up and he goes, "Block, you are violating this rule. You are violating this rule. You are violating this rule. You are violating this rule." as I was drinking beer, which the course did not sell, so But it was a fantastic round of golf, and like I said, I was pretty darn good.
It was a hell of a lot of fun too.
It was. Besides me being good, it was fun, and I challenge you to a rematch.
You did. You did.
Which you have not accepted, by the way.
Oh, I accepted that. It's on. And if I remember it, I even said that I would consume 4 extra adult beverages before we even go over you to try to even remotely make this fair. Because while you were great and I didn't play very well, we only played 9 holes and I still beat you by 18.
No.
Yeah.
No. The first mistake that we made as a group was we allowed you to count. Well, you know what? This is what happened. My game broke down just like it does on Golden Tee. I hit the ball really, really far, and then I get it to the green, and then I completely break down when it comes to putting.
Yeah, yeah.
I hit the ball way too hard, and then I get angry, and then I start hitting the ball even harder, which is not what you're supposed to do when you get to the green.
No, no, no. You need a little more touch.
I am an emotional golfer.
You very much so.
And I did the clubs that I was using, which weren't mine, a couple of them did get airborne during the course of the round. which I did promise that I wouldn't do, and of course I went ahead and did it. But that was
you
great.
Also you also promised to break your driver, but somehow you didn't do that either.
Well, I mean, I think when I bought it was like a $150 driver. I don't know what that would be 14 years later.
Yeah, I don't know.
I mean, it's just been sitting up against the wall in my bedroom for the last 8, so, I mean, I don't know. I don't know. But that was good. And then, I mean, we can't really talk a lot about it. There are lawyers involved, and there's a lot of sketchy things going on with it. But we had a really good day.
We had a very, very good day. And you know what's even worse is we can't even tell you about the parts that we remember, let alone what happened when we don't remember.
Well, there's a very, very, I'm very disappointed. I really am, because there are a couple rotten apples that stayed after the festivities were over that did whatever they did when everybody else left and apparently got caught and decided to throw somebody else under the bus and ruin their life. And I'm very disappointed in that. But other than that, it was a great day.
It was. It was. A lot of fun.
Yes. I want to thank, before we get any further, I want to thank Tinky over there at the Radio Expose, radioexpose.net, for having me on a week ago. That's why we didn't do a show last week, I think. That might have been the reason. I don't remember. I did the radioexpose.net, and I don't know. We talked about a lot of things, including butthole tattoos, Superstar.
Butthole tattoos?
Well, of course, you didn't listen to it. Butthole tattoos.
It isn't that I'm mad that I didn't listen to it. I mean, I am now because you're busting out butthole tattoos. I didn't even know you guys did a show until, like, last weekend.
I know, when I told you on the golf course.
Yeah,
I didn't know that you didn't know, but once I said it, I did feel bad.
I mean, I'm not mad. I'm just I would have definitely tuned into that. I just didn't know.
Well, let me involve you in the conversation right now, then. How do you feel about butthole tattoos?
You're gonna have to give me a little. Ask me later in the show as well. The brain has some time to process it. So you're not talking like even tattoos on the cheek or a trans stem. You're talking actual butthole tattoo.
Yes. Yes. Tattoo.
Wow.
Tattoo completely circumferencing the butthole. On the butthole.
I
the butthole. I watched the video. I watched the video, and now I have a virus. that's another story. But, yeah, well, okay, we'll talk about that a little bit later on. In other news, I am getting on a plane tomorrow, and I'm heading to Las Vegas. And, Superstar, you have a wager that I may not make it back alive.
I have a thought. The message I got earlier in the week was that you already need a doctor. You're in need of medical attention, and you haven't even gone on this trip. And you and I are both very used to coming home from Vegas saying, oh, my God, I need a doctor. But we've never actually said, oh, my God, I need a doctor before we've gone. So
I got a couple of emails this week because originally this show was scheduled for Tuesday. Didn't happen. Then it was rescheduled for Wednesday. Didn't happen. And now we're doing it right now. Reason was this. I blew out my back the other day, and I was very incapacitated. I went to work. I was able to drive, even though I still can't look over my right shoulder when I'm driving. So if you see me on the road, look out. I can't see anything. I got it fixed, but now it's all in my right shoulder, which is why I still can't look over my right shoulder. But I was in severe pain. And, I'm getting on a plane, this isn't going to be good because I got to go get my gimmicks. Otherwise, this is not going to be a real comfortable weekend. Because we're just going to be doing what we normally do in Vegas, which is, we probably shouldn't say. But a lot of the weekend is going to be spent at the pool, and which probably will be good for my back. Although every time I'm at the pool in Vegas, I get drunk and I start challenging people to swimming meets. that's just one of the things that I do, and of course I do really good until I swallow a bunch of water or it gets in my nose, and then I'm like, oh my God, I'm drowning. But yeah. It's a whole scene that you probably don't want to experience. But I probably shouldn't do that this time.
No. Maybe just kind of stand on the edge of the pool and drink your beer and, occasionally gawk at a girl in a bikini and then, repeat.
Superstar, we went to the Arlington Million. I just want to recap all this stuff because for the people that I don't talk to Superstar ever.
No, we really don't talk. I mean, I've had people actually ask me, like, so you talk to Puck, like, all the time, right? Like, every day. And I'm like, no, not really. I mean, maybe a few messages here and there throughout the course of the week. And generally, those messages are just planning outings like the Arlington Million.
It was a fantastic day, other than the fact that we thought originally that the Arlington Million was going to go off at about 5 o'clock, and that would give us plenty of time then to get down to the Bears game, for which we also had tickets for.
Yeah, it turned out
Superstar isn't a very good he didn't read the time schedule correctly.
Well, I saw two publications. One said 5:44 Eastern. The other one said, and that was the more reliable one. That was Arlington. And then the other one said 5:44 Central. And, I was like, well, I'm going to go by what they're saying and thinking that they're right and perfect. We'll leave right after the Million. And, we'll get out of there. We'll be on the, we'll be mobile and we'll double dip and get down to the Bear game. Well, I was wrong. However, it was a wonderful day at Arlington Park.
Well, I had a great time that day. And, first of all, we missed the Million. I still don't. I know I placed my bets. I have my ticket somewhere. I have a credit voucher of which I probably should go cash in before I get on the plane tomorrow. It would be of a nice help, but that ain't gonna happen. And but then we went to the Bears game, and by the time we walked in the stadium, the Bears were already up 7-0. We go and sit in our seats, and we had fantastic seats. And then, of course, we're like, well, let's go get some beer. Everything, you know, the game, it looks innocent enough. Here would be a great time for us to go get some beer. While we're in line for beer, the Bears go up 14-0. I mean, I don't think, until the end of the game, I don't think we saw the Bears score once.
I think we saw a field goal, other than that, and then at the end of the game. The Bears scored, people asked me after, they're like, how was the day? And I was like, it was great. How was the Bear game? Bear game was a blast. Oh, yeah, they won. I was like, yeah, they scored 33 points, and I think I saw six of them. I was, what? I was like, well, I was either in line getting beer, or I was in the bathroom getting rid of beer. I mean,
well, the best thing was I read the Bears were about to blow the game. So we went and got eight beers and put, like, after, like, 5 minutes into the third quarter, and we were just like, all right, we're set. Because if I couldn't watch the Bears go up 21-6 or whatever the score was, I sure as hell was going to stay to watch them blow it.
Right. Well, and I understand the principle. At some point, you have to cut, you know, well, let's call it a face. We need to be cut off at some point. And somebody needs to say, you two need to stop, because we won't. So I get it, but we were informed there that they cut off at night games 5 minutes into the third quarter.
Ridiculous.
Which, I get
you
it.
May, superstar, you may need to be cut off, but it ain't 5 minutes into the third quarter.
Right. That's a little bit extreme, because you're not, we're too smart for you, people. We're going to get our beer. Locke is going to go get two, and I'm going to follow him right away and get two. We're going to take those beers back to our seats. Then Locke is going to go back up, and he's going to get two more. And then he's going to come back, and then I'm going to turn around and go get two more. We're going to get our beer. You're just making us buy it all at once. That's all you're doing.
And when we walk it back to our seats, we look like geniuses. We become folk heroes.
We do, because everyone's like, you know, it's you know, you wonder why the building is half empty halfway through the third quarter. So nobody can get a beer. How are you going to sit there and watch an NFL game without beer? You're not. So
anyway, before we move on, I do want to say this. After the past, I don't know, 2 months, I don't think my running myself hard into the ground is the reason for my back injury. I actually know why I hurt my back, but I think I'm going to need to settle down a little bit in the month of September. So
it's probably a wise decision.
So I know. I mean, is it all this going? You know, I mean, going to the Cubs games, the Arlington Park, the Bears games. All these trips and all this Vegas camping, all this other stuff, the Navy Pier, we're just going to have to dial it back a little bit. So when I get back from Vegas, Superstar, I am going to quit drinking for
12 days.
12 days.
12 days, huh?
Yeah, I'm serious. 12 days. And basically, I'm going to put my I'm going to go into like stealth accountant mode, because I'm like really far behind on some of my work, some of my accounts. So I'm going to need to anyway. So it's actually going to work out pretty good. And then I don't know when the date of our next big outing is, but that's when I'll come back to reality.
I'm going to go very far out on the limb, and I'm going to say you fail. Not because I think badly of you or you can't do it, because I know you can. You've done it before. I just don't see opening day for the Bears and you not having a beer. It's just not going to happen. Now, I'll say this. I think you'll go the 12 days without overdoing it and having a crazy, ridiculous, you know, day and evening. But not drinking at all, I smell failure.
All right, well, we'll talk. Let's look at this here. Is that six? We'll talk on the 15th.
The 15th, all right.
All right, let's get into the news. The story today, Adam Johns of the Sun-Times. This is actually, there's two things I want to talk about here. Adam Johns got, are you playing an accordion?
Nope, haven't moved. Okay.
Adam Johns of the Sun-Times got a hold of Pat Brisson, who is the agent for Jonathan Toews and Patrick Kane. Basically, the story is, I don't know, I like these kind of things, because Adam Johns posed a hypothetical question to which he got a hypothetical answer to. Basically, Toews and Kane will consider playing in Europe should there be a lockout, as Pat Brisson is quoted here, under the right circumstances and appropriate time. But
appropriate time is the interesting phrase there.
But in this article, which I mean, I don't know. I think Adam Johns does a fantastic job. We should actually get him on the show. But there's just like a peculiar thing here at the end of this article that I just wanted to note, because this article is about, you know, Kane and Toews possibly playing in Europe, and if there is a lockout and it does project out to be for any serious length of time, a lot of guys are going to go play in Europe. That's going to happen. So this really isn't that much of a story, but it's something to note. I mean, it's noteworthy. But at the end of this, he talks about, this is reading from his article, Toews and Kane are the young faces of the Hawks franchise. And then he goes, Toews missed a part with a concussion, and he came back to 29 goals and 57 points in 59 games. And this, again, quoting this is Adam Johns here. Kane recorded 66 points last season. Although it was the lowest points output of his young career, Kane proved he can handle playing center in certain situations. What the hell does that have to do with anything? It's just a peculiar thing to put in the article. Kane proved he can handle playing center in certain situations. It just comes out of left field. I mean, I read this today, and I'm like, well, that's interesting. Why would he put that in there? Maybe Adam Johns didn't even think about it while he was writing. I certainly can identify with not thinking while I'm writing. But I don't know. I thought that that was peculiar.
Well, and it's an interesting comment based on what the article was about.
Right. I mean, it has no. I mean, if you really, I mean, it's just a blog entry for him. Although we'll see if it ends up in the paper tomorrow, like that. But although it was his lowest output. Points output of his young career, Kane proved he can handle playing center in certain situations. It's almost like, it's not Adam Johns advocating that Kane should play center, but for some reason he puts that point in there that, well, yeah, Kane ain't so bad. Sort of interpreting the sentence, I should say. It's almost like he's saying, well, no, he's not a bad option for that. I mean, I don't know. I don't know why it was there. If he thought about it while he did it, I just don't. I thought it was funny that it was in that article. Moving on, smaller news items. Blackhawks prospects who have since moved on. Chris DiDomenico, no surprise there. The Hawks didn't sign him. He was a restricted free agent. Really did nothing at all of note in Rockford for two seasons. After coming over in the Chris Versteeg trade, Chris DiDomenico signs with Asiago in Italy, which is Italy's A league. Also going over with DiDomenico is Paul Zanette, who was barely in Rockford last year, only played a handful of games in Rockford, but he was in Toledo for the most part. He had a hand injury at the start of the season, but near the start of the season, Paul Zanette also going to Asiago. Connor Goggin, who we actually got an email about a month ago, Connor Goggin signs an ECHL contract with the Trenton Titans, which is the Philadelphia Flyers ECHL affiliate. Not so surprising. I thought that if he was going to sign an ECHL deal, he'd probably go somewhere else. Obviously, with a lockout looming, and there just not being really any spots. I mean, even to begin with. I mean, if Sean Lalonde's going to be around this year, which it appears as though he will. He hasn't been traded, so he's here. And you got Clendenning, who's gonna play in the AHL. And then you have the possibility of some other guys coming down and starting the season. I mean, there's no job for Connor Goggin to even compete for. So the Ice Hogs aren't going to give him an AHL contract. So that makes sense. Maybe for him to go somewhere else. Toledo signs veteran guys to play the defensive position. So it makes sense that he would go somewhere else. So he latches on with Trenton. And also Simone Denny Pepin, who I know is John of the Fifth Feather's favorite Blackhawks prospect. Denny Pepin, this is from a while ago, but he signed an ECHL contract with the Orlando Solar Bears. So those guys are all moving on. 12 prospects who aren't moving on. And were sent to Sweden last week. Interesting list, I guess. Blackhawks, as they did a year ago, in which 7 players were sent over to Switzerland to practice, and because the European leagues are about ready to start. European leagues start typically a month before NHL teams. So not all the leagues, but some of them do. So over in Europe, these European league teams are three, some are even a month into their training camp already. So these guys are in full swing. The Blackhawks sent over, like last year, they sent over a handful of guys to go over there and get in a little bit of a mini camp. For the Blackhawks management and everything, it's a good way for them to get these guys together and get them in a competitive atmosphere and sort of evaluate where these guys are at right now. And for the players, it's a nice perk almost, and an opportunity to get a head start on training camp. The 12 players that were sent over, and they were sent over to Sweden, and it wasn't the Swedish Elite League. It wasn't the Swedish Elite League. It was the B League. But Nick Letty, Marcus Kruger, of course, is from Sweden. Dylan Olsen, Jimmy Hayes. Surprise was Kevin Hayes, who's going back to college. In order for Kevin Hayes to keep his collegiate eligibility, he would have had to pay his own way to get over there. So that's why I say interesting. I mean, the Blackhawks in no way could be involved in sending him over there. He could be on the same plane. He would just have to pay, you know. So, I mean, obviously Kevin Hayes wanted to go. Ben Smith, Brandon Peary, Jeremy Morin, Brandon Saad, Adam Clendenning, and, of course, the Swedish defenseman, Klas Dahlbeck. And Brandon Boleg, who was only there for 2 of the 5 days. Well, 3 of the 5 days because he had a passport issue. I guess you would say that the notable guys that didn't go, and I don't know the reasons for it, Andrew Shaw didn't go. Although I don't know that he was asked. Of course, Kyle Beach didn't go. I would have thought of all these guys, I would have thought Kyle Beach would be able, you know, would be sent over. You know, maybe. I mean, I didn't see really a reason for Kevin Hayes to go. I mean, Kevin Hayes is not ready to turn pro. I mean, I don't know. That one seemed peculiar to me. But. Yeah, those were the notable 2 omissions. Barry Smith, Ice Hogs head coach Ted Dent, were over there. Matt Tellin, who's the head European scout for the Blackhawks, and also Kevin Delaney, who is the Blackhawks skating coach. They were all over there helping run the practices. And the Blackhawks scouts, prospects, were intermingled with the Swedish team and also some NHL pros that live in the area that practice over there before coming over for the NHL season. So, including a guy who, you know, was didn't even play hockey anywhere last year, Darius Kasparaitis. So,
there's a blast from the past.
I know some people asked about Joe Lavin, why Joe Lavin wouldn't have gone. I think the reason why Joe Lavin didn't go is because, I mean, really, I mean, 12 players is a lot. And, you know, you had Klaus Dahlbeck already over there. So the Blackhawks didn't, you know, I mean, not that it's killing them on expenses to send another guy over, but, I mean, they had four defensemen and eight forwards. So, I mean, that was enough. And if Dahlbeck's already going to be over there, you know, and you want to send Clendenning because, you know, you want to get him again. You want it's really important, I think, to Stan Bowman that Clendenning is given every opportunity to perform well. I mean, you know, I mean, pulling a kid like this out, even though, you know, I mean, offensively, there wasn't really much room for Clendenning to grow at Boston University. In fact, he was probably more in line to develop bad habits at BU in his junior year than he was anything else. So in today's day and age, NHL teams, you know, unless there's a kid and the kid's family that have their hearts set on the kid getting an education, you know, even though, I mean, if you're that good of a prospect, you could just go back and get your degree some other time. You're not going to need it right away. But, I mean, to pull him out like this, I mean, he's going to get minutes in Rockford, but he has to play well in Rockford because the last thing they want is for Clendenning to struggle and then be put in a situation where you're like, oh my God, we got to send him to Toledo. And it's not the end of the world if he gets sent to Toledo. But then there's going to be some people second guessing their decision to pull him out. Maybe, you know, was it a year too early? Are they hurting, you know, are they stunting this kid's development? You know, I don't think that they're going to have those problems, but certainly if there's a work stoppage, you're going to have Dylan Olsen in Rockford. There's a good chance you'll have Nick Leddy in Rockford. And I do want to point something out because I think some people read, or maybe they just skimmed over the article that I wrote on the thirdmanin.com, and just, you know, I nowhere in that article did I say that Nick Leddy is going to play for the Rockford IceHawks or Marcus Kruger is going to play. I said they were eligible. And I know a lot of people have asked about this. Any player with an NHL with a two-way NHL contract, meaning he has an NHL AHL contract, you know, any player with a two-way contract, regardless of age, can play in the AHL during the lockout. So Nick Leddy's still on his entry-level deals. All entry-level deals are two-way contracts. So Nick Leddy is eligible to play in Rockford. He doesn't have to, but he's eligible. So he could play in Rockford. You know, you can have, I mean, there are guys around the league that are 27, 28, 30 years old, or even older, that have two-way deals. Those guys can play. You know, it's just when you get up there, when you're talking about guys in that age group, though, there is a veteran limit in the AHL, which is basically you can only have six veterans in any given game lineup, not including goalies. But, I mean, the Ice Hogs aren't going to have that issue. But, yeah, so any, if you want to go on Cap Geek or, you know, you have it committed to memory, any Blackhawk with a two-way contract is eligible to play in Rockford. And I would expect that those guys will. I think the only guy that, you know, may stay home in Sweden, although, you know, I know the Swedish Elite League, I think it was the Swedish Elite League, said that they weren't going to sign any players to partial season contracts. But there are other leagues over there. But I think it would be in Kruger's best interest just to come over and play in the AHL. I don't see why he wouldn't do that. And, of course, Jimmy Hayes may end up in the AHL anyway. Ben Smith will. Brandon Peary most likely will. And, of course, these other guys. But, yeah, that's the story there. Brandon Bolig looks enormous, by the way. Huge. Getting ready for the season.
Got to do it.
Let's go to emails. Since we're going to talk about the CBA anyway. Block, seems like every expert is predicting a lockout for at least part of this season. Is there any chance the two sides surprise us all and get a deal done by September 15th? Do you think there's any chance we could see a repeat of 2004-05? Of course, referring to the lost season of 04-05 when we last had a CBA negotiations. Do I see them getting a deal done by September 15th? No. Is there a chance? Of course there's a chance, but no. I think basically where this thing stands as we are recording, the other day the NHL came back with their second proposal to the CBA, which of course came more than a month after their first proposal. And it was a month almost to the day that it took the NHLPA to respond to that first proposal. On Tuesday, I believe, correct? Tuesday, Wednesday?
I believe it was Tuesday.
Tuesday, the NHL made their second proposal. And apparently, Friday, which is tomorrow, when we're talking right now, Friday, the NHLPA, now remember, it took them a month to come up with a counter or an alternative or an answer to the NHL's first proposal. This time, it's going to take them less than 3 days. I call shenanigans. I think that a lot of this is just tugging on the chain of the media and the fans. It's all posturing. The owners want to pay the players less, a lot less, and, you know, I was talking to somebody about this the other day, actually a couple of people, one including Al Simaglia, who brought up an interesting point while I was talking to him, and the point that Al, and we're going to get Al on the show pretty soon too, I got other guests that are actually pretty interesting guests, but I got to return some emails. And I got to do it before I leave tomorrow. But so I don't want to say anything before I do that. But the point that Al made, and you know, he and I sort of expounded on it, was that this time around is a lot different than last, in that the last time that we had this in 2004, the majority of the players' union that were actively involved in the negotiations, that were that were leaning on Bob Goodenow, or sort of talking to the other players and keeping younger players and sort of disassociated players, seven, 8 years ago, there was a lot less interest, players association wide in what was going on than there is this time. But back then, you had a group of older players that were on the backside of their career that were the ones that were heavily influential. This time, you have players that are a lot younger that are still in the prime of their career, and some players that haven't even reached their prime that are the ones that are getting involved in what's going on here. I mean, you have some guys that are older, like Henrik Lundqvist, Henrik Zetterberg, but I think even more important this time around, and this is why I think this thing is about to get real ugly, and it should. If you're just looking at it from, and I'm not saying it's right or wrong, I'm just saying looking at it from the player's perspective. The NHL owners, I mean, they've been giving out in the past. Just look at the deals that have been given out in the past 2 years. Heck, the past 2 weeks. They're handing out all these deals long term for a lot of money to these kids that are in their mid early 20s. Heck, Sidney Crosby isn't even old, and he just signed a lifetime contract. He signed a stupid contract, first of all. But he signed a contract basically for the rest of his career. You know, I mean, if revenues continue to grow in 5 years, Sidney Crosby is going to be grossly underpaid. That's why I call it a stupid contract. And I think, by and large, player agents in the NHL are the dumbest of all the sports. But you have all these players, and this is the one thing that the league really has going for it, is you have all these players that are locked up into these deals for years and years and years. And you have the league that right now that's saying, okay, all those deals that we gave you, we want to take nearly a quarter of that money back. If you're the players, I mean, there's no way you're just going to go ahead and agree to it. There's no way, and nor should they. You know, I'm firmly of the belief that if you sign a contract, you should honor it. The owners don't want to honor their deals. So, from the players' perspective, I mean, this last proposal that the owners said, oh well, you know, we won't do a rollback. And we'll cut the salary cap back, but we won't do a rollback, and we'll give you a little bit more revenue sharing this time around. But we're gonna change the way that we calculate revenue sharing, which I want to get to in a minute, because I think it's actually very fair what the league is proposing. But we're gonna change the way we calculate it, and we're gonna take more money out of your check and put it into escrow. I mean, the league's second proposal was basically a long way around to get to the same point that their first proposal, they made. So I think that what's going to happen on Friday is that the players are going to come forth with a proposal that they've been already preparing for weeks. Because I think that first proposal that Donald Fehr made was a complete joke. Because under no circumstances were the league ever going to agree to it. And they responded by completely ignoring it. And I think what's going to happen on Friday is the players are going to come forth with a second deal. With a second deal that is going to basically completely ignore what the owners just proposed. And what you're going to have is you're going to have the owners that are going to take a step back, and they're going to be appalled, and they're going to say, oh, the players aren't negotiating in good faith. We proposed all these things, and now they're just ignoring us and changing the entire framework of what we're trying to do. And, you know, then you're going to have the players that are going to step back and say the owners are just trying to screw us. And I think this thing's about to get ugly. I think we're heading towards a period where both sides take a step back and say, well, we're not getting anywhere, so there's no point in talking. And we're almost at that point. And I think that we're, like I said, I think we're really close to, you know, going days and days without them. I mean, maybe they'll meet and talk about minor issues, but days and days going by with them not meeting on major topics, not negotiating about the big issues or lessening the gap that they apparently have. And every day that they don't, obviously you get closer to the 15th. And then, of course, you'll get hard-line stances near the 15th. And then once the 15th passes, then both sides dig their heels in. And I think that that's what's going to happen. I also got an email. Actually, my screen just froze. But I remember I got an email from someone that was basically saying, why not, if the size of, you know, let's just say hypothetically, ignore everything that I just said, let's say hypothetically they do get closer, and they and all of a sudden it's September 15th, and it seems like they're really close, but they're not quite there. What's the, what are the odds? Or, you know, I mean, the person said was asking that they just say, well, why don't we let's take some of these terms and institute them, and why don't we start the season based on this deal? You know, what are the chances? I don't think that. First of all, I don't think it's a good idea, because while it may be frustrating, and while we may lose a month or 2 or 3 months off the season, whatever they need to do to, you know, fix this in their, you know, in the owners' minds and the players, whatever the players end up conceding to, because that's in the end, that's what's going to happen. Whatever they got to do to fix this, get it done now, because it in any situation, you know, I know that some people said, oh, well, what, you know, the players are playing that card in the media that, you know, we just want to play, we just want to play, and the owners are the ones that are trying to lock us out. We're preparing for a season. It's like, well, you know, don't treat us like we're stupid. The reason why the owners have to lock you out, the players out, is because if they play another season under the deal that they currently have, that the owners are saying, and whether the owners are hiding money and are trying to screw the players or not, and they probably are, but whether that, you know, this is a negotiation, and if they play another season under the deal that they already have, what incentive do the players have to even negotiate? What incentive do the players have? And once the players start making their money, why would a player say, okay, you know, the owners want to take some of this money away from us, and we're in the middle of the season, yeah, we'll give some of that money. No, why would they do that? And the longer the thing goes on, Donald Fear starts to say, wait a minute, you said that we couldn't operate under this deal, and here, you know, we're going along fine. The buildings are full. Merchandise flying off the racks. TV revenue's coming in. The league's operating just fine. Why do we have to give it any rollback at all? Why do we have to give up a percentage of our, you know, I mean, and then, like, just say that you operate for a whole season, they don't come to a deal, which is what would happen. Because, again, there's no incentive for the players to negotiate if they're not locked out. So if the players are playing and they're making the money that they're owed as of right now, there's no incentive for them to even negotiate. So they have to be locked out. Don't get mad at the owners for locking the players out, because if they don't lock them out, there's no negotiations. There won't be any. They have to do what they have to do. Otherwise, this thing goes another year, and then you'll for sure lose a season next year. You'll for sure lose a whole season. Because, again, you go through a whole other season under or close to what you currently have, and the players just say, well, we don't need to change anything. That deal that you said that you couldn't operate under and the league couldn't sustain under, these franchises are in such peril. Well, we went through a whole other year. Revenues are growing. Everything looks great. Tell us why we have to give all this back. I mean, I don't think the owners, and this is going to sound funny, I don't think the owners are dumb enough to make a mistake like that. On that note, on hockey-related revenue and the changes that they want to have, some of these things, you wonder, the big one to me, and I know that the players are going to be, like, seriously opposed to this, but, I mean, I can't believe it's not figured into hockey-related revenue now. The owners want, you know, the money that, you know, and this is, you know, during the lockout, teams will still have expenses. They'll still all these guys that have two-way contracts that choose to play in the NHL, all these prospects that would play in the AHL no matter what, the NHL, the Blackhawks are still paying these guys. So there's still, and it's not a whole heap and helping of money, but it's still money that's going out the door And the Blackhawks, I mean, they have your money. You know, they do have your money. I mean, they're not going to have to. Rocky Wirtz isn't going to have to take out loans to pay the Rockford IceHogs salaries. But I mean, there are these expenses. But what the owners want is all that money that gets paid to players that are playing in the AHL. The owners want to include that in the hockey-related revenue. And what that means, basically, hockey-related revenue is how they calculate where the salary cap is going to be. As of right now, that's not figured in. I mean, that's a serious expense that's paid to players that are in the NHL Players Association. It should be figured in there. I can't believe that it's not. The owners also want to remove the caps on apparently, you know, it's been a long time since I read the CBA, especially the hockey-related revenue part. But they want to remove the caps that have been placed on revenue generated from concessions and parking. That would make sense, too. And then a bunch of other things that are just basically expenses that aren't included, like expenses expenses incurred on basically revenue generating initiatives. And all those things make sense. I don't think the changes that they're proposing to the calculation I think are I don't think there's anything wrong with it. But again, I mean, it'll change the how players, you know, the percentage, what percentage of that that money will go to the players, and that's something that'll take time for the players to even figure. All right, moving on. Hey, Chris, have you had any more run-ins lately with pigeons? No.
That was a pretty scary incident you had.
It was. If you missed, I think it was their last show. We talked about that. I had an altercation with a pigeon outside of a Jewel Osco. Here's another one. Hey, Block, is the relationship advice segment no more? I enjoyed it for its overall train wreck. That's enough of that. Actually, no, it is no more, because I do have a question. I've had this question for a couple of weeks, but I have a question. And of course, if you need relationship advice, now, because Superstar, if there's a lockout, we are going to be scrapping for material.
Oh, we're going to be in trouble.
Well, I mean, we're not going to be in trouble, but if I have to start telling stories about, like, things that I've been up to, then we're going to be in real trouble.
Yeah.
Don't make me tell the story about me following that woman into the city hall to weigh herself. Don't tell me that story doesn't need to be told. Let's see. Oh, here we go. Chris, love the show. Was hoping I could make a contribution to Puck Chatter Radio and get some advice at the same time. There we go. You ready?
I can't wait.
This is we're going to need some help from you on this one, because well, here we go. My girl and I have been together for 2.5 years, and I am under some pressure from her sisters to pop the question. My girlfriend says she's in no rush to get married, but I figure the encouragement from her sisters is coming from somewhere. Sisters are nothing but trouble. Shortly after our 2-year anniversary, she and I discussed our timeline. Wait a minute. Let's just stop right there. This is from, and I hope he made a good choice, asking for his name to be withheld. Of course he would. Shortly after our two-year anniversary, she and I discussed our timeline. Now, first of all, Superstar, you are married.
I am married.
What's the deal with the timeline? I don't think. Did you have a timeline?
No, we didn't have a timeline. And I don't think you can put a timeline. It's just got to feel right. I guess I could slightly understand the timeline. You know, people get busy, you know, and especially now in today's age, women are more focused on their careers now than they ever have been before. So, you know, a lot of planning needs to go into it. You know, do you wait till you're both finishing with school? Do you both wait till you have stable careers, or, you know, you land that first job, or, you know, a lot goes into it now. And so I guess I vaguely can see a timeline if you're talking about that stuff. But, you know, when you know, and you know, you can't put a time on it at the same time.
Well, here's the other thing. Now, first of all, he says he and his girl have been together for 2.5 years. I say you got another good 2 years before you have to pop the question, buddy.
coming from the single guy, I don't think you have. Here's the deal. You don't have 2 years because you're absolutely right in your assumption that urging from her sisters, you know, that's coming from somewhere, and it's not her sisters. So
yeah.
I don't think the play clock is running down, and you better call a timeout or hike the ball this second. But at the same time, I don't think you have all day to be checking the defenses and audibling either.
I think that timeline thing, you know, and of course I don't know these people, but I think that timeline thing is her way of trying to make him feel comfortable. But the word that's coming from the sisters is the real scuttlebutt.
Absolutely.
So, name withheld. Go look
Start
for
ring shopping.
If you really like this girl, go look for ring. Don't listen to Block. Don't wait another 2 years. Although I would wait another 2 years.
You would.
And,
you would.
Yeah, I would. But go ring shopping. Otherwise, the next time you hear from those sisters, it's not going to be so nice.
Yeah. Well, you know, we just gave him absolutely awful advice, and he's going to email us back in about a year, and he's going to say, do you know any good divorce lawyers? But, you know, we wish the best of luck to you, but yeah, go ring shop.
If you like her. If you don't like her, then just, you know, go with the time. I don't know. Or you could break up with her.
I was about to say, or you could start dating one of the sisters.
Yeah, her sister's engaged or married. Maybe that's an angle that I didn't even consider. You know, maybe the sisters aren't married and they want to live vicariously through her. I know. Oh, all right. Well, here's more. You know, here's another thing. This is another question on the CBA. Basically the gist of this long email, but basically the gist of this is Bettman. Is Gary Bettman taking us fans for granted? I don't know. Do you think the league is taking the fans for granted if they go through another lockout?
I don't know. For granted, I don't think so. I mean,
I don't think he can take it for granted. And if it's like if you're going to get mad at Gary Bettman, he's taking treating the fans like idiots. He's taking it for granted. It's like wait a minute, whose fault is that? They left you for an entire year and you came right back. You know, hockey fans are. I think hockey fans for the most part are different. Although I will say this, I was when I get out there amongst the people and I talk to, I talk to people that are, that live outside of the bubble. I mean, I talked to some people just at the bachelor party over the weekend that, like, they had no idea they're like, well, so what's going on? You know, like how are the Blackhawks going to be doing? And I'm like, well, they probably won't start on time. They're like, what? You know, like people don't even know. But I think that hockey's so, like so different because hockey fans love their hockey, and they're gonna come back. And you can't get mad at Gary Bettman because you're loyal. I mean, if you know, don't be loyal. Don't come back. Don't watch when they come back. Don't buy tickets when they come back. You know, don't get mad at him for understanding his audience. You know, I mean, Gary Bettman says, "Oh, we have the best fans. We have the greatest fans in sports." Well, I don't know that he does, but he has pretty damn loyal fans. His fans, I mean, one of the reasons why, and this is another thing that if I'm, you know, I'm big on timeline and context. And one of the things that I don't see really anybody mentioning anywhere when talking about the owners and their proposal of a rollback, one of the main reasons why there was a rollback in 2005, and this, you can't lose sight of this, and if I'm a player, it's like, rollback? Why the hell am I talking about a rollback right now? Revenues are up. You know, the league's doing great. We're growing every year. Why are we talking about a rollback? The reason why there was a 24% rollback in 2005 was the uncertainty of the state of the game, the health, the immediate health of the game. If you recall, in 2005, not only did the league, it was gone for a year. It's unprecedented, right? It was gone for a year. You didn't really know if the fans were going to come back right away. You didn't know what the ratings were going to be. There was a grave uncertainty of the immediate health of the game. That is the main reason why there was a 24% rollback in 2005. And to go with that rollback in 2005, there was also rollbacks on ticket prices across the league, you know, aside from a couple of places. Across the league, there were discounted, I mean, season ticket holders were getting, you know, they got a reduction on their prior rates. To attract new season ticket holder buyers, they're giving away these great deals. As of right now, are the Blackhawks calling up their season ticket holders and saying, "Well, if we get this rollback from the Players Association, we'll be able to send you a check for 15% of what you paid us"? No, that ain't happening. I mean, there's no reason at all, if you're the players, to accept any rollback, a 1% rollback. No, you shouldn't. It shouldn't even, if I'm the Players Association, don't even come to me with that, because there's no reason for it. You know, there's so many people, well, they did a 24% rollback. They did a 24% rollback 7 years ago because they didn't know if the league would survive without it. You're not at that point right now. I mean, but anyway, I mean, that the game that's being played right now, players are saying, "Oh, we just want to play, we just want to play, we just want to play." Bettman says, "Oh, we have the best fans, wink, wink, we know that you'll come back. You know, we know that we're going to get your money in the end." And that's why the owners can hardline and the players they'll be unified, but then what are the players going to do? And I do believe that the players just want to play. They're going to go to Europe, they're going to play in the AHL, and then there's going to be some guys that are left out. And then all of a sudden, some guys that, you know, I mean, you know, these guys that are playing for less than $1 million, you know, and some guys don't save their money. You know, you're gonna have some of these guys who are like, man, I really maybe don't need a paycheck, but goddamn, it'd be really nice if I had a paycheck right now. And I mean, the longer that it goes, the more that the Players Association will start to grumble, and you'll have differing opinions, and you know, you'll loosen up that union a little bit, and that's the game that'll be played, period. All right, moving along. Next email. Hey Chris, did you see you know, I got a bunch of emails about this. Basically, NHL.com and also John Jackal of HockeyBuzz.com did prospect rankings, like Blackhawks prospect rankings. The most recent one was on Monday on NHL.com. Senior writer Dan Rosen. I mean, the email here said Mark Kelly's rankings. These weren't Mark Kelly's rankings. These basically, these were, I believe, what I think these are is the NHL.com writer's consensus. But this particular email wants to know my reaction to Kyle Beach being ranked the sixth best Blackhawks prospect on NHL.com, and he thinks that's a joke. How could he be ranked above Mark McNeil and Adam Plendenning? Well, first of all, I mean, what has Mark McNeil shown you since he's been drafted? And I'm not going to grade Mark McNeil, you know, yet, but what has he shown you? He's shown you absolutely nothing. So, I mean, you know, I hate rankings anyway, because unless they're absolutely and clearly defined, they mean nothing. You know, what? How are you ranking them? Are you ranking them in terms of ultimate potential? Are you ranking them in terms of predicting how many NHL games they'll play? Are you ranking them in terms of what kind of impact that they'll have? And some of those things, you could blur those lines. But that's my point. It's like, if it's in terms of ultimate potential, then, you know, you're going to look at these rankings, and then years down the line, it's like, well, those rankings were terrible because look at how it turned out. It's like, well, I mean, some of these guys do have potential. They're just not going to realize it. There's countless guys that are like that. Anyway, NHL.com from, we'll start with number 10. They had Steven Johns, 9, Mark McNeil, number 8, Kevin Hayes. I don't know. I'm really going to try to put Kevin Hayes under a microscope this year at Boston College, because I see nothing in him. Number 7, Adam Clendenning. 6, Kyle Beach. 5, Teuvo Teravainen. 4, Philip Deneau. 3, Jeremy Morin. 2, Brandon Peary. And number 1, Brandon Saad. Brandon Saad, he better be a hellraiser, because there's an awful lot of people that are expecting him to be. And I don't know. I like Brandon Saad a lot. I think he's got a nose for the net, and I think that's his best attribute. I think he's got a nose for it. I think he's got a willingness to go to the net. But I don't know about it. I don't know about his all-around game. John Jackal of Hockey Buzz, who I know a lot of people like to whip on, but he's got some interesting. His number 1 is Teravainen, which. I don't know. I mean, I've never seen Teravainen play, so I couldn't put him number 1. But that's on his list. Number nine is Joakim Nordstrom, who signed. Joakim Nordstrom. I should point this out. Nordstrom signed a Blackhawks signed an NHL contract, but he's actually not coming over this year. He's got 1 year left on his deal with in the Swedish Elite League. He's not coming over this year. Number 8, Jeremy Morin. 7, Steven Johns. Steven Johns better get interested in playing for the Blackhawks for these rankings to be accurate. So number 6, Dylan Olsen. So, I mean, I guess in the NHL, I guess you have to presume that unless they're – if they finish the NHL season with the Blackhawks, then they weren't eligible for that list, I'm assuming. 6, Dylan Olsen. 5, Adam Clendenning. 4, Mark McNeil. 3, Philip Deneau. 2, Brandon Saad. And 1, Teravainen. That's John Jackal's. I know a lot of people have been asking me to do one, and I hate lists like that, but maybe I'll get a few people together. A couple of them have to be anonymous. But we'll get a few people together and try to put some kind of conversation together, because I know people like that kind of stuff and whatever. On to stupid things that Blackhawks fans say on the internet. I know you've been looking forward to this segment, Superstar.
I have it. Well, you know, and I know where you're going with this. I read it, and I think I'm more looking forward to you lighting people up.
You were very upset with me when I gave you this homework.
I was. Because it's so bad, it's good.
I think your exact response was, I hate you for making me read this.
Yeah, I believe that was the exact message I sent.
You know, I don't normally do this. And again, I try to be a people person, but sometimes people ruin it. And this person ruined it. BlackHawkUp.com. You know, and I get it. It's the summertime, and you're on the internet, and you're enthusiastic about writing, and you feel like, or maybe you, I don't know what the deal is over there. You have to come up with content a number of times a week, so you come up with a theme deal. And this person here at BlackUp.com came up with what they termed the Dirty Dozen, which is basically this writer's 12 most hated Blackhawks. These are the 12 Blackhawks that he cannot, or former Blackhawks, that he cannot stand the most. It's a fascinating list. And it's even more fascinating to hear him support his list. Should I recap the Dirty Dozen?
Oh, you have to.
Number 12. Patrick Poulin. I'm not going to Blackhawk up, but and nothing against them. That's just I'm not gonna. My recollection of that particular piece, number 12, was basically that Patrick Poulin was a frog pussy. That's why I hated him.
That's what I got out of it.
Number 11, Tyler Arneson. I wish I had that one in front of me, because didn't he hate Tyler Arneson because of unrealized potential and laziness?
Yeah, I believe, you know, it was a very big piece on not showing up in game shape, you know, not getting ready in NHL shape to play.
Oh no, we'll get to shape later, because there's an irony in this that we're going to get to later. But yeah, I think it was Tyler Arneson, who was what, drafted in the seventh round, didn't, you know, he was upset that he was a part of the ABC marketing. Were you a fan of the Blackhawks in the early part of the last decade? What the hell else were they going to market?
Not a lot.
No. He hated Tyler Arneson because the Blackhawks marketing staff, the one person on the staff back then, had to come up with something, so he came up with that. So he hates Tyler Arneson because he was drafted in the seventh round, didn't realize his potential, and he was marketed as something that might be good. Let's talk about one very specific here. I love this one. Number 10 of the Blackhawks that he hates the most, Jack Skilly, who was a Blackhawk for collectively about a month. But he hates him.
Yeah, he definitely hates him. And you know, the thing I have up right now, and here's the quote, he was never a major goal scorer at any level. His career high in any goals at the University of Wisconsin was 13. And then he goes on to say he followed that up with, you know, 20 goals in 08-09, and 23 goals in 09-10.
But he was never a major goal scorer at any level, Superstar.
No.
No, you understand that, right?
Yeah. He was not a major goal scorer, but 23 goals in 09-10. What's a major goal scorer? I mean, that's a pretty good season.
I mean, he says one thing here that I have this one in front of me. He says one thing here that is accurate. I mean, I can't remember how many times I have seen Skilly shoot the puck wide or directly into the pads of the goaltender. Well, that's true. Jack Skilly wasn't very good. But then he goes on to say, it is Dale Talent's fault why I don't like this hack. This is misdirected hate. Why does he hate Jack Skilly? Because Dale Talent drafted him where he did.
Right, right.
He hates Jack Skilly because he was drafted 7th overall. It's not.
that's Jack Skilly's fault, yeah. And he does mention that, you know, he was taken in front of guys, you know, Devin Setoguchi, Mark Stahl, and Anze Kopitar. So I get it. Like, you can be like, wow, we could have had those guys instead we had Jack frickin' Skilly. But that's not Jack Skilly's fault, douche.
Number 9, Dan Carcillo. We're going to run through some of these. Number 8, Anders Ericsson, which I didn't even read, but I'm guessing is because that he was traded for Chris Chelios and he didn't become Chris Chelios. I'm just going to guess. Boris Mironov, that's, you know, I mean, I don't know. I mean, I can't argue with that one. Matt Walker, he doesn't like, I remember this, he didn't like Matt Walker because this guy doesn't like bad defensemen. He hates guys that are 6th and 7th defensemen. Every team's got to have him, and this guy's going to hate him. Number 5, Alexander Kurpatsev. Makes sense. This is where – number 4, Thomas Kopechi, which he spelled wrong, by the way. He hates this guy so much, he doesn't even know how to spell his name. That's some serious hatred. Whatever. I don't want to waste my – number 3, this is where it gets really good. Number 3, Cristobal Huey. Someone emailed me a couple weeks ago, and they're like, or I think it was last week, you know, with the link to this. He said, like, what do you think about this? Like, what, you know? And it was a really well thought out email. I responded to the guy. I go, this writer defeats his own thesis in the second sentence. Dirty Dozen number 3. And the writer, what's his? I shouldn't shortchange the guy. If you're going to write something stupid, you should get credit for it. Greg Boyson. Today we get to make fun of French import Cristobal Huey, as he is number 3 on my list of most hated Blackhawks. Here is another guy. Didn't stand. There's no who in there. Didn't stand much of a chance due to the contract he was signed to, which isn't his fault. But then he goes on. I mean, the reason why he doesn't like him is because he was overpaid. It's not his fault he was overpaid, but I hate him anyway because he was overpaid. An idiot. He was signed to a big contract to be the number one goalie, but he could never hold on to the job. Whether he was battling for the number one spot with Nikolai Abibulin or Anthony Neme. Let me tell you, first of all, part of the reason why I want to talk about this is because there's a lot of people that you know, the Huey thing, you know, ultimately it's up to Huey to perform, and he didn't perform. But I don't get the hatred towards Cristobal Huey, because what exactly did Cristobal Huey cost you? I mean, he cost the team money, but for 2 years he was off the books. He didn't really affect anything. Did Cristobal Huey cost you a Stanley Cup? No. His first year with the club, Joe Quenneville, in the last quarter of the season, actually it was only a couple of weeks before the season ended, Joe Quenneville had two goaltenders, Abibulin and Cristobal Huey, who were performing basically equally. But Quenneville had to decide which guy he was going to go with for the playoffs, because you don't alternate goaltenders in the playoffs. Most, you know, 99% of coaches won't. He had to choose one, and he decided to choose the guy who had won a Stanley Cup. He made the logical decision. it was Nikolai Hobby-Bulin who was chosen, and he went on to play in that playoff. It wasn't Cristobal Huey's fault that the Blackhawks didn't win the Stanley Cup in 2009. Now, fast forward a season. Now, again, Cristobal Huey was signed. You know, I know some people that have listened to this or, you know, read for a long time. I've heard this before. But when Cristobal Huey was signed, Nikolai Hobby-Bulin was not supposed to be a part of the team moving forward. In fact, if you recall, Cristobal Huey was not even allowed at training camp in 2009. They had a deal in place, in principle, with L.A. that L.A. backed out of. It may not have been a principle, but they thought they were trading Hobby-Bulin to L.A., and then L.A. backed out of it. Because if you remember back then, I mean, the number one goalie in L.A. was Eric Erzberg. Jonathan Quick was still in the ECHL. And once they backed out of that and Hobby-Bulin didn't want to go to Russia, they were stuck with Hobby-Bulin. They allowed him to come back into camp, and then, you know, you had two guys that, you know, needed. I mean, they always wanted to move Hobby-Bulin, so they had to play him. Didn't have to play him, but they played him, and he played well. I mean, it lit a fire under Hobby-Bulin's ass. It did. And I remember Hobby-Bulin started off really well, and him. You know, by the middle of the season, towards that end, again, I mean, there wasn't too much different the way those two guys were playing. But, again, Quenneville chose Hobby-Bulin. Fast forward to the next season. Hobby-Bulin's gone. Huey's, is going to be the number one goalie. You have Antti Niemi, who backed into the backup job. But he got it. And the problem with that is a problem that Joe Quenneville has had in a lot of places along the way is that he already had it in his mind that he didn't trust Huey because at the end of the previous season, he didn't choose Huey to be his guy. So he already had doubt in his mind about Huey. And whenever Huey had a bad performance, you know, which goalies do have, it only got worse. I mean, I'm not, again, if Huey would have played the way he did in that last little stint when he got traded from Montreal to Washington, if he would have played that way, it would have been, everything would have been fine. But, I mean, what reason is there to hate Cristobal Huey? You want a cup, so he didn't prevent you from winning a cup, and then he got. And then the other thing here, and this again, thank the hockey gods that the Hawks wised up and banished QA to the AHL. That never happened. QA was never in the AHL. He went through waivers for the purpose of loaning him to the Swiss League. Never went to the AHL. Number two. This is where it really gets fun. Dustin Byfuglien. Of all the Blackhawks throughout time, this guy hates Dustin Byfuglien the second most. You know why that he hates? Do you remember why he hates Dustin Byfuglien?
I do not.
Because he's big, fat, and slow.
Oh.
Accuses Dustin Byfuglien being big, fat, and lazy, which is quite ironic because I'm looking at a picture of Greg Boysen, and he's big, fat, white, out of shape, which obviously means at some level he's lazy. So the big, fat, white, lazy guy hates the big, fat, lazy, black guy.
Awesome.
Greg Boysen, a Chicago Blackhawks fan from the womb. So that must be like the elite fan. It doesn't get any better than that. From the womb. He has to let you know that he is the tippy toppest of the Blackhawk fan that you can be. From the womb, I live and die with every line shift. I will offer a no nonsense and humorous view of everything Blackhawks. I haven't seen anything funny, aside from how he supports his thesis. And the number one, which I sort of get, but number one is Adrian Aucoin. I don't really, you want to hate Adrian Aucoin, that's fine. All right, but there's a reason why I was willing to talk about this, and we'll end with this, is there's a lesson to be learned, okay, from what happened after the last lockout. There's a lesson to be learned. Dale Towne gets criticized for the guys that he signed. You know, he was given money. Bill Wirtz gave him money, and he spent it. He went out and got the reigning Stanley Cup championship goaltender in Nikolai Habibulin. He went out and got Adrian Aucoin, who was one of the better unrestricted defensemen in that class that year, coming out of the lockout. He also got Jason Cullimore, Matthew Barnaby, although Barnaby was, those two guys were even before the lockout. Marty Lapointe. Dale Towne was criticized, and rightfully so, for not completely understanding the changes that came, the rule change, you know, how the game was going to speed up with those rule changes. Rightfully so. Rightful criticism. But the lesson to be learned from that is, what did Nikolai Habibulin, Adrian Aucoin, Jason Cullimore, and those guys, what did they all have in common? They did not play hockey during the lockout season. And what happened to Habibulin and Aucoin? They came back. It was a faster game than they were used to a year, you know, when they had last played, and they took an entire season off. And when they came back, the two of them had nothing but problems with injuries. The team suffered because of it. I mean, it was going to be a mediocre team at best, but the team suffered because of it. It became a losing culture. And, you know, I mean, I don't understand why Nikolai Habibulin's not on this guy's list, because Nikolai Habibulin, if he's truly a Blackhawks fan from the womb, and he was there during those first three seasons coming out of the lockout, there's a reason why Huey was signed. And it was signed because the Blackhawks couldn't trust Nikolai Habibulin. He was accused of not playing through minor injuries. He was accused of not being interested, which was, I mean, there are people that tell you that Nikolai Habibulin was not a good teammate. He just wasn't interested half the time. When they played somebody good, when they played the Red Wings, he'd be inspired. He'd play well. A Thursday night against the Islanders or Ottawa, not interested. I don't understand why Habibulin's not on this guy's list. Adrian Aucoin is an example of a bad team that has to go out and spend a lot of money and gets a guy who's not a premier defenseman. He's not Chris Pronger. He's not Shea Weber. He's not Ryan Suter. He's not a guy in that class, but they get the best guy in the next tier. They have to overpay to get him, and then he's brought into an atmosphere, and he said, well, we need you to be a leader. Well, he's not a leader. He's not a leader. He's not an elite defenseman, and you bring him into a losing culture, and the whole thing went wrong. I'm not defending Adrian Aucoin, but you're getting mad at you know, you hate these guys. Why? I don't get it. But I'm sure you can read Greg Boyson's thoughts over there at Blackhawk Up, and I'm sure they're just fascinating. What do you got coming up on the holiday weekend?
Not a lot. Hoping the rain doesn't come up and maybe get out and play some golf. But other than that, not a lot. Not nearly as exciting as a trip to Vegas.
You know what, though? I was informed today it's going to rain in Vegas, which is not good. Because if it starts raining, that means I got to go back inside. And when I go back inside,
things happen.
Trouble commences. You want to talk about butthole tattoos?
No. I decided to skip that topic.
All right, you told me to save it till later. I remembered.
I know. Yeah, no. Now let's skip it. I can't think about butthole tattoos.
Okay, we'll talk about that next time. No, we won't, because we're not going to talk about butthole tattoos with Steve Ludzik, who I don't know the date yet.
Maybe Steve Ludzik has an opinion on the subject.
Maybe he does. I wouldn't put it past him. next week on the show, the earliest it would be is Wednesday, because there's no way I'm doing a show on Tuesday. Wednesday, Thursday, probably. Steve Ludzik, hopefully he'll be on the show. I think he's going to be on the show. It's a time issue right now. But it'll probably be earlier because he's on the East Coast, so we're probably looking at 7 Central. And then more stuff. I mean, we'll have a lot to talk about because we've got the Rockford IceHogs. They're starting up their season and a whole bunch of other things to talk about. Superstar, thank you very much for joining me.
Of course.
I want to thank everybody for listening. We are really kicking it with listeners right now. We're up around 5,000 a show, which may just be the same people listening to the show over and over and over again. I don't know. I think we have 1,000 listeners, and they listen like every other day. That's what I'm thinking. It's hard for me to wrap my head around 5,000 people listening to this.
Yeah, no kidding.
But we'll go with it. That's what it says. So we'll go with it. Anyway, if anybody's looking for golf tips, I'm available. You need relationship advice? You need help on your golf swing? I'm your guy. Or you could hook up with Superstar, either way. All right, everybody. We'll talk to you next week, Steve Ludzik, and that'll be a good conversation. I don't know what the heck this was, but that'll be a good show. So until then, goodbye to the people, Superstar.
Goodbye, people.
All right. Thanks, everybody, for listening. TheThirdManIn.com, PuckChatter.com, BlogTalkRadio.com/TheThirdManIn. And also check out those Radio Exposed guys. They're pretty cool, too. Thanks for listening. Good night, everybody.
Dream of circles perfect, eyes within your face. My heart's an open wound that only you replace. And though the moon is rising, can't put your picture down. Love can be frightening when you time is right, I hope that you'll respond.
Golf's no different from hockey. Requires talent, self-discipline.
Golf requires goofy pants and a fat ass. You should talk to my neighbor, the accountant, probably a great golfer. Huge ass.
I tell you, I should have stayed home and played with myself.